Hello, and welcome to this month's Insurance Contracts Project podcast. My name is Andrea Pride. I'm a technical principal at the IASB, and I'm joined today by Patrick Finnegan, one of the board members. At this month's meeting, I think the topics fell into three natural sections. We did some housekeeping where we dealt with a number of topics that still needed to be dealt with in terms of decision making to round out this model. And those were on reinsurance and contract modifications. We also had a look at the FASB single margin approach, and this was the start of the steps that the board will take to evaluate the differences between the two models and work out how to bring them closer together. And finally, we also had an education session on other comprehensive income, when the two boards were able to discuss the issues relevant and we were able to get an idea of where this decision making might fall in the end. Turning to the first on this of housekeeping points, we had two topics really there. One was on reinsurance and one was on contract modifications. Pat, would you care to give us an overview of how you saw the decisions there?
Yes, thank you, Andrea. I guess this month you could characterize as the boards being very agreeable because they seem to arrive at common decisions across the board on many of these issues that you just identified. In the area of reinsurance, we dealt with two or three issues. The first dealing with the accounting for retroactive reinsurance contracts. These are reinsurance arrangements where the reinsurer is providing the primary insurer or the cedent, as it's commonly known, with coverage or protection for losses that have already been incurred. Contrasting that with, say, a prospective arrangement where the losses may be incurred. Here we decided that both the cedent's reinsurance recoverable and the reinsurer's insurance contract liability should reflect a single margin that is spread or amortized over the remaining settlement period in the same way that the boards had previously discussed that accounting for the primary company or the cedent company, which is on a release from risk basis for the FASB and for a release based on the pattern of services for the IASB. In addition, we spoke a little bit about what we call loss-sensitive features. These are features in reinsurance contracts that essentially either provide the cedent company with the option or the option or the obligation to make an adjustment to the premiums to be paid based on the actual loss experience or claim experience of the reinsurance arrangement. So in this particular case, the board made a decision to account for these particular changes as part of the claims and benefit cash flows rather than as part of the premiums, as long as they're not identified as investment components. So that was a change, I know, for the FASB, for U.S. GAAP, where today the current practice is to reflect such features as premium adjustments. And I guess the less area or item that the boards considered in this area dealt with whether or not, in terms of making the assessment, whether to evaluate a reinsurance contract under the BBA approach, the building block approach, or the premium allocation approach, how the reinsurer should go about doing that. And essentially, the boards decided to apply the exact same criteria for the classification of the underlying primary contract. So there wouldn't be any differences there.
So, Pat, really, the reinsurance decisions this month are mostly about taking forward existing decisions that the board's come to in the past. And although we've got a diversity, a disagreement between the boards, it really is only a logical conclusion of the previous position that the boards were in on the premium allocation approach for short-duration contracts. Let's turn now to the contract modifications. We've got two types of modifications, I think. We've got now a substantial modification notion, which would mean that the existing contract is derecognized, and a new contract containing all the modified terms is recognized in its place. We also talked a bit about non-substantial modifications and how those might be treated.
That's right. For I guess what we'll call substantial contract modifications, these are sometimes also known as riders, which are contractual terms that typically exist at the inception of an insurance contract. One point that we decided is that these terms should essentially be subject to all the same decisions on unbundling and disaggregation. So treat a rider as if it was part of the basic contract. And you know, the idea here is that if there is a significant term that modifies the contract that calls for a different contract to be in place, then there should be a derecognition, if you will, of the existing contract and a recognition of a new contract. The terms by which those items would be effectively evaluated is a very qualitative kind of assessment, as opposed to a quantitative assessment of a comparison of the previous contract with the new contract. And this is where the two boards got into, I think, a very good discussion, which may require some further follow-up by the FASB. But essentially, here we're talking where the contract, if it's in the scope of the original insurance contract standard, or whether the premium allocation approach or the building block approach essentially would be modified. And that decision as to which of the two models you would fall into, any kind of changes affecting those decisions effectively here would be considered a significant or substantial contract modification.
So we're really talking about the sorts of modifications that come after the beginning, after the inception of the contract, that had they been in place when the contract was originally recognized, might have caused a different accounting model to be recognized. That's where the focus was really, isn't it?
Exactly. Now, as you said, we also discussed non-substantial modifications. And this would fall into generally two categories, one being where the modification either eliminates or reduces some of these insurers' obligations for benefits that were in the original contract. The second would be a modification that would in fact entitle the policyholder to additional benefits. In the first case, where we're talking about a modification that would eliminate some of the benefits, essentially here we'd say that the insurer would derecognize that portion of its obligation along with any related residual or single margin embedded in that obligation. In the case where we're talking about the addition of benefits to the contract, the conclusion was that we would treat that amendment essentially as a new standalone contract. Both boards were in agreement with those two conclusions.
Okay, turning down to the next session, which was on the single margin. This was an education session that was held by the FASB so that the ISB would have the opportunity to understand their approach, which has been developed since the boards made different decisions on the risk adjustment. Pat, are there any observations you'd like to share about that session?
Well, as you know, for since we published the exposure draft and the discussion paper in the summer of 2010, this is an area where the two boards have had a difference of opinion. The ISB has measured the insurance contract using a building block approach that comprises the unbiased probability weighted cash flows discounted. And added to that would be also a risk margin. But in order to calibrate the liability at inception to an amount that would essentially result in no gain, we would also add a residual margin. The FASB goes through essentially the same mechanics, if you will, but instead of having a dual margin of a risk and residual approach, they have calibrated the premium the liability to the premium using a single margin, sometimes also known as a composite margin. So this is where we've been for the last 2 years. And the question now is, in order to evaluate whether we can arrive at a common set of conclusions to converge on this very important area, because it has significant implications for the way the profit from insurance contracts emerges, whether we can essentially come to a common decision here is essentially what we're trying to evaluate. So the IASB was getting an education session from the FASB staff on the mechanics of a single margin and how, in fact, that would flow through the financial statements, and in particular the statement of comprehensive income of an insurer. The immediate or logical consequence of this discussion is that the boards really have more educational work, I think, to be done. There's probably more devil in the details, I would say, in terms of deciding exactly how we might converge. For example, would the ISB consider a method of amortizing the residual margin that would be consistent with the way the FASB is amortizing the single margin? Would that be a sufficient a step to bring convergence? Or, do we have to actually go through the decision and essentially eliminate the dual margin approach and adopt the single margin approach? So there's a number of different permutations that I think we could examine and look at in this area to evaluate just exactly if in fact we want to retain the dual margin, what steps we could take to more or less mimic what you would have under a single margin and the consequent amortization of it, or do we in fact just adopt a single margin approach?
Yeah, and I think the summary by the chairs of the meeting with Leslie and Hans was focused on whether at this session was whether or not the boards felt that they understood the differences between the two approaches enough, and the differences were characterised. And I think that's right. It's about whether or not you remeasure for risk, what the release pattern is, as you mentioned, what release period you release that margin over, and also there's a question about the presentation about whether it makes enough difference to want to present them separately or combined. So perhaps I should say a few words about what I see as the next steps on the single margin reconciliation effort. I think at the next meeting in May, the plan at the moment is to bring a paper asking the ISB about these differences and asking them whether a change to the single margin approach in any of these areas would be enough for them to want to revisit their previous tentative decisions. So we would say, for example, on the remeasurement point, if the ISB thinks that remeasurement is important and the single margin were modified to accommodate remeasurement, would that be enough to revisit the risk adjustment decision? And I think we're going to have to take this in fairly slow steps. Like you said, the boards have been discussing this for the last 2 years, even longer actually, because it came up in the development of the ED as well. So I think taking this one step at a time is the way to go. Okay, and the last topic we talked about was one that's been debated extensively over recent months, and one which I know that many listeners will have a great interest in, which is the use of other comprehensive income. And I think there was a lot of material in the papers this month, a lot of food for thought, a lot of detail about how it might actually work. But I'm sensing that the boards were beginning to absorb that detail a bit, internalise it, and are now looking for the bigger picture. Would you say that's fair?
I agree. As you know, back in November, the ISB took the decision to at least explore the creation of this third category for accounting for financial instruments as part of its overall work on accounting for financial instruments. And this is obviously very closely tied to the work in the insurance contracts project. Because one of the single, loudest criticisms of this model is the potential for accounting mismatches that would result if you have assets measured at fair value through the P&L or at amortized cost, and you have a current value measurement of liabilities. So this education session, I think, is the first concerted step, obviously, by the if we in fact make this decision to adopt a third category, which we have not yet formally done yet, but kind of leaning towards, you know, what are the implications? I think what we learned in short is that it's not a a simple set of principles to lay out. There's quite a bit of complication that emerges in the mechanics, if you will, of creating a fair value through OCI approach. So the staff began through a series of examples to illustrate the mechanics to the boards and posed a series of questions to them as to what their preferences were so that they could then move forward and perhaps develop papers with the view towards making decisions in this area.
And of course, the decisions there, as you mentioned, this is really dependent on what the ISB does about introducing a third category on the financial assets side. So I think the expectation is that we should be able to do that next month, and then that will allow us to move forward on the insurance contracts liability side as well. Okay, so that's a bit of an overview of the last meeting. Looking further ahead into May, I think we will be carrying on with rounding off some of the topics that are left outstanding, hopefully making progress on the other comprehensive income, as you mentioned, and working towards finishing our deliberations through by the summer, so certainly by July, and the aim is to be doing drafting through through the autumn into the fourth quarter of the year. I don't know if you've got any insights on the timetable or how you see this playing out, but I think at the moment that's where we're at the moment.
Yeah, I think the critical months here are May and June, and I think if the boards can make progress around the mechanics of OCI, and then of course the question that we just dealt with in terms of accounting for the margins, those two areas, I think then the timetable you've laid out is quite feasible.
Yes, good. Okay, well, thanks very much for sharing your thoughts on the meeting, and we'll speak again. Thank you.